And welcome to Rod Talk here on M88. It's your hosts, Mandy and Yo, joining you this evening as the Pittsburgh Steelers are playing against the Baltimore Ravens right now in the AFC Championship. And just a quick update for everyone. The Pittsburgh Steelers still winning 13-7, just in case you're curious. Because I know I was, but I thought I should just toss
that
in.
But that's not what we're talking about
No,
tonight.
That's not what we're talking about tonight. You're right, Mandy. It might seem like a kind of a strange way to start off the show, but it's what's happening right now. And, tonight's topic, it's a heavy one. It's a difficult one. It's a challenging one. It's an emotional one. But it's one that's so important to discuss and so important to wrap our minds around, get a biblical perspective on it, and try and view it from God's perspective. And tonight we're talking about abortion. It's Sanctity of Human Life Week or Sanctity of Human Life Month, depending on which promotion you look at. I've seen it both ways. This is Sanctity of Human Life Sunday. And so that's what we're going to examine tonight. And we certainly would like your calls and your opinions as we go through this tonight. So write down the phone number, 505-338-5790, as we discuss these things. If you have a question or if you have an answer to one of our questions, an opinion to share, this is the opportunity to do it. And we certainly encourage you to call in. So 505-338-5790 if you want to call in tonight as we talk about this. Also joining us tonight, we have David Lee from Justice for All, and he is going to be joining us and offering his expertise and insights from the national level on this particular topic. And David, before we really get rolling, why don't you introduce yourself and tell people a little bit about Justice for All before we really get rolling?
Thank you, Yo. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you tonight. Justice for All, our mission statement is to train thousands, and most of those thousands are Christian students. We want to train them to make abortion unthinkable for literally millions, and we want to stress that that needs to be one person at a time. So our ministry is a training ministry that is directly then related to an outreach that we produce very close to the training. We partner with Christian high schools, colleges, churches, organizations, both community and campus organizations. And so we then try to help those students understand how they can relate as ambassadors of Christ to their peers on this very difficult subject called abortion.
And real quick, what are some of the ways that you train people for this? I mean, obviously you train them to explain what abortion is. Do you train them for counseling? Do you train them for, post-abortion counseling and helping people understand the whole spectrum of this?
Our pre-exhibit, I'll explain what the exhibit is in a few minutes. Our pre-exhibit seminar probably sums it up in the title of that seminar. The name of the seminar is called, quote, Abortion from Debate to Dialogue, end quote. And what we find, not only on the question or subject of abortion, is that most Christians are not well-equipped to discuss their faith. One of our theme verses from Scripture is taken from 1 Peter 3:15, where Christians are exhorted to be ready to give an answer for the hope that is within them, yet with gentleness and reverence. And most of the time, Christians that we've seen in the field see their role as more of a Hannity and Combs kind of relationship where they stand toe-to-toe with the opposition and shout them down or tell them why they're wrong. Our training stresses that our job as Christians is to actually learn to listen and to learn to ask the right questions, and on any topic, regardless of what it is, but especially abortion. If we can learn as Christians to ask questions, listen, and then probe for why someone believes what they do, typically what we experience, especially with the backdrop of our exhibit behind us, most of the folks we get to interact with talk themselves out of their position, and we've never given them that much information except that which is on the exhibit. So it's really a process of teaching people to listen would be the first lesson.
All right, and I want to talk more about the exhibit here in just a moment. But before we get to that, Mandy, why don't you share some of the things that you dug up, statistically speaking, when it comes to this issue of abortion?
Right. Well, I was doing some research on it, and one thing I've noticed is you get a lot of questions, and that's the reason I wanted to start off with this. You get a lot of questions when you start to talk about abortion being either pro-choice or pro-life that look like, what about women who have been raped, or what about women who are struggling with health, and that's why they're looking at abortion, or, you know, even wondering why it is that the women have these abortions. And something, actually, I found it really surprising what some of these are. Religion being the first one on my list, which really shocked me percentage-wise, says that Protestants obtain 37.4% of all abortions in the U.S. Catholic women account for 31.3%, Jewish women 1.3%. People with no religious affiliation at all are 23.7%, and those who claim to be born again or evangelical are 18%, which was shocking to me because it seems like born again, evangelical, or even Protestant are not that far away from those who have no religion whatsoever. Some of the other things I found were the majority, 38% of women who have abortions make between $30,000 and almost $60,000 a year, which people often claim that a majority of women who get abortions are very low income. So that was another surprise for me. Reasons why women have abortions says that only 1% occur because of rape and incest. 6% of abortions occur because of potential health problems. So both of those are very, very low. 93% of all abortions occur for social reasons, and that being it was either inconvenient or a personal issue, whether they thought that they were going to be looked down upon or anything like that, which that one to me was not as big of a surprise because I know the reality of that. Another thing that I noticed, this one shocked me as well. It says that 43% of all women will have at least one abortion by the time they're 45 years old. It's 43%. That's a huge, number,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you look at it. And then the last one I noticed, and this one, I'm not going to lie, with this one I got kind of frazzled inside, I guess. But it says about 14% of all abortions in the United States are paid for with public funds, virtually all of which are state funds. 16 states, and New Mexico is included in this. So 16 states pay for abortions for some poor women. And that one, obviously, was a little frustrating for me. But yeah, those are some of the ones I found out. And, you know, I just thought it was interesting that those statistics break a lot of the debates that I've heard. Because some of the biggest questions I have are those, what if something horrible happened to this woman? Or, you know, what if it's going to cause her health problems, the birth of the child? And that it's such a low percentage,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so I just wanted to, you know, talk to people about those a little bit before we went into this, because I mean, and so that people know, these did actually come from the Planned Parenthood place. So these weren't just thrown out there on the internet. They actually come from the organization itself.
Well, we're talking about Sanctity of Human Life Week, and David, real quick, I mean, how do you and your organization, Justice for All, how do you sum up that phrase? It's a phrase that's tossed around a lot. We hear it a bunch. It's almost become cliche, and in doing so, lost some of its impact and meaning. I mean, how do you summarize that statement and explain to people what it really means?
Wow, that's huge. I think that Mandy's research is helpful, perhaps, in that I think it's hard for most of us as Americans, and especially even as Christians, to get our head around the numbers that Mandy was running through. That actually Christians, self-professing Christians, are having abortions at or close to the rate of the general population indiscriminately. One of the numbers that Mandy did not perhaps share, but she probably unearthed in her study, was that, and this is very disturbing, is that about 45% of the abortions done in 2009, and in actually every year, will be performed on women who've already had at least one abortion,
right.
Which means to us that abortion doesn't teach you that abortion is something to be avoided. It actually disposes those who've participated into doing it again. And so what the sanctity of life phrase means to us is that it's probably just a lip service among even Christians when they find themselves in a pregnancy that they don't want to be in for whatever reason. And so somehow we have to translate truth from, say, a pulpit or from the Bible or from those who know the truth and can personally share that, somehow we have to communicate that individually and become more than just a word giver. We have to somehow be willing to engage people at a level that makes us part of their lives and trustworthy to help them through difficult times.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, the whole concept of maybe we use that phrase as lip service, because I think that is probably one of my number one frustrations when it comes to this particular issue. And this is probably the point at which a lot of people are going to want to call in. So 505-338-5790 if you want to respond to what I'm about to say. From my perspective, this is purely my opinion, Christians really get passionate about the pro-life issue. They're all about it. This last election proved that more than anything else. Over and over again, I heard, that's the only issue. It's the only issue on which I'm going to vote on, yada, 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 yada. And yet, you look at the statistics, and our actions don't match our words. They certainly don't match our devout passion when it comes to protecting this issue. And I have to wonder how much of this is really a fundamental worldview. Because if it is a fundamental worldview, which my opinion is it is, then obviously Christians aren't going to follow it, because only 9% of Christians really have a biblical worldview. So like you said, when it comes to, you know, where the rubber meets the road and they confront it face to face, well, suddenly the sanctity of human life is just a phrase that they were using to, you know, fit in with the rest of the Christians, because that's what we're supposed to believe in. If you're a Christian, you're supposed to believe in pro-life. That's just the way it is. Don't even think about it. That's what you do. But my problem with that is, when Christians just think that's something they're supposed to do without even thinking about why, well, then it's meaningless. I mean, it doesn't matter to me if you're pro-life as a Christian, because you're supposed to be pro-life as a Christian. Right. What matters to me is if you believe in this issue because you've thought it through and you understand that it's a worldview that goes behind this. And as far as that goes, I think the church has done a poor job with this, because, yeah, everyone knows how vocal we are about it, but when it comes to living it out, not so much.
Right. Well, and that's another thing I noticed. I was actually at lunch with a group of friends today, and this topic got brought up. I was just asking for prayers for the show tonight. And one thing that a friend of mine said is that people are pro-talk. It's not so much about being pro-life or pro-choice. We're pro-talk. You know, we have the bumper stickers on our cars. We, you know, of course, you know, I'm sure you've seen some of them out there, but the bumper stickers, and you have things written on maybe your Facebook or your MySpace about being pro-life, or organizations that you've, you know, kind of joined. You've put your name on the list to get emails or whatever. But how often do we actually get involved in this issue? How often are we actually talking to people about it and know what backs it up, being the Bible?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not just saying, well, I'm this because I'm supposed to be, like you were talking about, yo. And that just really struck me when he said that we are, as a majority, believers, we are pro-talk, and we'll talk it up. We'll let you know that you need to be a certain way, and you need to, you know this, but we don't really know the scripture behind it. We're not being proactive in our beliefs on this issue at all.
Mandy, a pastor that I have never actually personally met but have talked to on the phone, used to be from Oklahoma. I'm not sure where he is these days. His name is Pastor Richard Exley.
Mm-hmm.
Nearly two decades, wrote a book entitled Pro-Choice, Pro-Life by Conviction, Pro-Choice by Default. Let me say that again. Pro-Life by Conviction, Pro-Choice by Default. And I think that echoes what you're saying, is that for many Christians, being pro-life is being able to say, stake your position out, but apologetically be unable to defend it at a level that is going to be able to communicate the truth without becoming, in essence, itself offensive to those you're speaking with. Not that the message of truth wouldn't be offensive, perhaps, to someone who disagrees with a Christian worldview, but that the messenger shouldn't be offensive is exactly what it means to be an ambassador.
Yeah, and you know, when I was thinking about this is where I get riled up, is when you get into the apologetics of anything like this. You know, my whole thing is, why do you believe what you believe? And you know what? Call on now, 505-338-5790. Is it enough just to be pro-life? I would say no. I would say, you know, if you're just pro-life because that's what you're supposed to be, you're not doing anyone any favors. And here's why, because Why are you pro-life? Well, because it's bad to kill babies. Who says it's bad to kill babies? On what do you base that? Where does that concept of right and wrong come from? I mean, if we keep going back to it, it fundamentally comes down to a worldview. Do you believe there's absolute morality that is comes from a transcendent source? Or do you believe that it's right now because that's what the church believes, and I'm going with the majority on this one? Because if you're doing that, when the majority changes, your convictions are going to change. And, David, what do you guys do with Justice for All and your ministry training to try and go beyond just, well, this is a good right thing to do, quote-unquote right, and help instill with people an understanding of just how much it is a worldview that has to come from a moral code that doesn't come from people but comes from a transcendent source?
We take a large exhibit to public university campuses, and when I say large, it's 20 feet tall, 40 feet per side, and it's three sides. You can see the picture. It's a photo exhibit. You can see the pictures of this presentation from nearly two football fields away and understand what they're showing and read the large text that accompany some of those pictures. It's something that you could choose to avoid, but you can't ignore when this comes to campus. It always, almost always, makes the front page, top of the fold, student newspaper, color pictures of the exhibit. And so anywhere on campus that you go, it's very difficult to avoid this topic when Justice for All has come to your campus. And those who might be listening in your audience tonight or hear this later will testify to that very fact. It becomes the subject in the classroom. It becomes the subject over lunch. It becomes subjects in the dormitory. And we have designed this exhibit so that it asks questions rather than giving answers. Now, the pictures can represent answers, but the text itself is predominantly questions. What makes it a lightning rod for the campus, what makes it a discussion point, is that this exhibit contains the use of abortion visuals. That is, it shows children that have been killed by abortion. So how we do it, Yo, is to actually show the culture what abortion is doing to unborn children. I sometimes accuse most of the folks on campuses that we take the exhibit to as having relatives from Missouri. They look at me very quizzically on that point and say, well, how can that be? I've never been to Missouri. No part of my family lives in Missouri. Well, I say maybe it's just genetic, but most of the folks that we encounter have to see it to believe it. It's from the Show Me State, if some of you know the motto in Missouri. And so helping people understand not only abortion but life before they're born is actually something that most Americans have little knowledge about and really haven't thought much about. So our exhibit is an effort to help them pictorially understand life before birth, death by abortion, and then ask the question, how then should we live?
Now, Mandy, you've seen this particular exhibit.
Yes, I have.
And I think I remember when it did come to UNM mm-hmm. campus. I don't remember if I was on campus that day, but I think I remember the fallout, if you will,
yes.
of it, because being a Christian on campus, that didn't disguise that fact. A lot of people bombarded me with questions, which mm-hmm. was great because, you know, I got to talk with people about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
But what was your experience when it came to UNM?
Well, I was going to CNM at the time, and okay. I had walked over to UNM just to visit a friend over there. And I remember walking through this one portion by the sub over at UNM, and I just saw this huge exhibit. And you're right, David, it is huge, and it's very hard to miss. And so I remember walking by it, and they had a microphone there, and they were doing just a free speech, letting anybody really who wanted to take the mic and ask questions or give their view, which I thought was great because I'm a very opinionated person. If
That's why you're here.
New Mexico hasn't been able to tell that yet. But I remember just really having the desire to talk to people, not in a way that was rude or yelling at them or anything like that, because that's totally not my desire at all. But I wanted to talk to them just about some of the things that I've seen with people that I know who have gotten abortions and how it affected the women and how it affected the fathers of these babies, just in different ways. And so we just talked on the mic for a while, talked to them about these stories that I knew and the possibilities of people I knew who have had teen pregnancies or babies that at first weren't wanted and then were born, and how treasured they are now. And ultimately, the result was getting a hanger thrown at me by a group of women that was there. But it's still affecting people, and I could see that just in the eyes of some of the people who would walk by. I had people coming up to me weeks after that who I didn't know, some of which who were angry, and some of whom were just really excited to see that. But it's a great experience because it gets people to think, and, you know, like you were saying, David, it's not so much to just give an answer. It's not to say this is what we believe and you need to believe it too. It's to pose a question and to let people know that these images that are up on the screens are real. They're very real. And one thing just to point out real quick that I noticed, because I think that there are a lot of women who really don't know. They haven't seen these pictures and they don't know what it looks like. And I read story after story online throughout this week about women who would go into abortion clinics and ask to see the picture of the baby or of the fetus, as they put it in these stories. And the organization that was about to do the abortion was very hesitant. They didn't want to show them the picture. And I really think it's just because of when you see that image, when you see the little hands and the little feet and you hear the heart beating, it's such a real thing that you cannot ignore at all.
Mm-hmm. And before we move on, David, real quick, I want to have people, you know, if you got questions about abortion, if you got an opinion that you want to share, this is the forum to do it in. So please call. And I understand it's not always an easy topic to discuss, but it's an important one to discuss. So if you got questions, if you got something you want to say, 505-338-5790. And, David, one of the things that you mentioned was how your organization, you're not just trying to beat people over the head with this. Because as we all know, that approach really doesn't help a whole lot when all you do is tell people you're horrible, you're evil, you're disgusting, you're going to hell if you even think about considering doing this. You were saying that, you know, you want to open a dialogue with this. How do we keep this from turning into a shouting match? Because it is such a hotbed issue. There's so much emotion invested in it. You know, if we as Christians are really going to engage in this topic, how do we keep it from just turning into a shouting match with us saying, you're a sinner, and then they saying, you can't tell me what to do?
Well, I think probably one of the quick answers to that would be to consider our master's approach to people who did not understand the truth. I've never read in the scriptures, the gospels, of Jesus yelling at people who did not understand truth. Most of the times that he got angry or mad or said things to people that were harsh were people who claimed to be very religious and very knowledgeable and to be leaders, in fact. And those are the people he got a little rough with. But the folks who really were clueless about life, especially morality and spiritual life, he really, the woman at the well, the teaching of parables, he just constantly used questions to encourage them to investigate their own heart and mind. And so I think that's the main thing, is that following our mentor, Christ himself, is that getting angry is really counterproductive most of the time. And of course, the message in James from his brother was that, in fact, we're to be slow to speak, quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to anger. I might mention to your listening audience that if they would go to www.jfaweb.org, that's jfaweb.org, they could get the opportunity, as we're talking here, to visualize the Justice for All exhibit that's put up on college campuses, and in so doing, they'll be able to see also some of the pictures that we use for presenting this. They can go to the virtual exhibit and browse and look around at the various panels that are put up. There's 15 pictures or 15 large picture panels that are put up, and as Mandy said, it creates a lot of interest, a lot of discussion, and our main goal, as I stated at the beginning, is to train Christians to be ambassadors, not just on the abortion topic, but it's a great practice tool, because you can always get a conversation if you ask the right question. So what do you think about this subject, or what do you think about electing a president who's perhaps the most pro-choice president in the history of the nation? How does that, you know, is that something that you're concerned about? And so you can always get into a conversation. It's so easy.
Yeah, it doesn't take much, especially on this particular issue. And we have Teresa on the line. Teresa, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say, Teresa?
Hi.
I
had that dilemma in my life where I had to make the decision to have a child that I did not want at the time. And it was hard. I was scheduled to do it. And the day before, all my friends said, you need to do it. There's no way you can go to college and do this and have a baby. And one friend said, you can't do this. You'll be sorry. And that one friend changed my mind, and I canceled it. And they were very rude when I called to cancel the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter now is 22 years old, and she is the most godly, wonderful person that I know. And I look at her and I thank God every single day that I would have missed one of the greatest blessings in my life. And it would have just, and if I would have done what I thought was right at the time, I would have just had an echo in my heart and my life. And it's funny because I became a nurse and I found out the stages of development in a fetus. And you know, a baby can feel the abortion. And they don't wait that well known. And I remember talking to the doctor, and he says, it's just a mass of cells. It's not. They hurt when it does. And it's a very brutal way to die.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't let that be known. And the thing is, just that one person saying to me, you can't live with this. You can't do it. Saved my child's life. And I became a Christian after that. And I served God. And if I had no other reason in this world to serve God, he died on the cross. That alone, I mean, that's immeasurable. But for him to save my daughter's life, and she stands before me, and I look at her, and I think, thank you, God. Thank you. And I am eternally grateful to God for that. So that's what I want to say.
Well, thank you so much, Teresa, for sharing that story. I know that's going to touch a lot of people, and it's certainly a story that is worth sharing. So thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, I just wanted to say one other thing.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, I'm sorry. My daughter, it's one of those things. My daughter's the one who says it's the circumstance of her birth. I let her have that freedom. I don't say anything because there is a stigma to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But she said the other day they were talking about abortion and how it was right to have abortions. People should have that right. And she turned around and said, you know what? I was supposed to be aborted, and I'm alive, and I thank my mother for making that choice, and I'm here today because of that. So, okay. And now I'm really funny.
Okay.
Well, that's such a beautiful reminder of just God knowing, you know, and the Bible talks about it a couple times, God knowing who we are before we're even born, while we're in the womb, and even before we were conceived, God had already conceived us in his mind, and he already knew and loved us from that point, you know, and it's just such a beautiful reminder to me.
Yes, it is, and thank you so much for calling in, Teresa, to share that. Next, we have Samantha on the line. Samantha, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say, Samantha?
Hi.
I
was just calling in to say that, in my opinion, these women and young girls that go out and they have these abortions, your body is God's temple. And so when you are killing off the child that is within you, that maybe God had you have that baby for a reason to change your life, you're killing off part of God because he's inside of you.
Well, that's an interesting perspective, but what if the person who's experienced this is not a Christian, hasn't been saved, has no concept of understanding that they were created by God or that they're God's temple? What if they don't know any of that? How should we expect them to understand any of that? I mean, what do you do then?
Or what if they were raped?
Or, yeah. I mean, you make a good point, Samantha, but my question is, we can't always expect people to understand the way we value ourselves as Christians. If they have no relationship with God, they're not going to value it the same way, will they?
Well, no, you're totally right. They won't value it the same way, but to just maybe be able to help people understand that you don't have to get an abortion because that child could really change your life.
Yeah, and I think that's a much better way to approach it right there, Samantha, to help them understand that they are valuable, that God does love them, that they are very precious to the King, and that the life inside of them is very precious. It's such a slight difference to go from, you don't understand, it's not your body, it belongs to God, your temple, and to approach it that way is kind of abrasive. But to approach it that way is, you don't understand. You matter.
Right.
God loves you.
Right.
You matter to God. He created you special. You are a temple to glorify Him. You know, and it's all in the slight turning of the phrase and how we approach it that can make all the difference. And I'm so glad you brought that up, Samantha. And thank you so much for calling in with that.
You're welcome. Thank you guys for having this.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks, Samantha.
And if you guys want to make a comment or add to the conversation like Samantha and Teresa just did, 505-338-5790 to call in. 505-338-5790 to jump in on this conversation. And David, I'm kind of curious with your organization, Justice for All, how much do you come across this problem where maybe people don't understand just how much they will regret going through with this? That, in my research and in my personal experience, that's something a lot of people don't know, that that there are consequences to this, whether they realize it or not.
Yeah, I think especially even for guys, I think for the women, I think we can logically get there easier than we can for the men. I think the men really get caught on the backside of this without maybe even having a clue that that's going to happen. And maybe what we should say, especially here, is that Christ's death made possible the forgiveness of sin, and abortion is not an exception to that blessing. And so those who are listening tonight or who would listen future to this broadcast would want to be assured that even maybe they're a Christian and yet they still don't feel forgiven of their participation in abortion, that really the message that I think Samantha was trying to convey and that we should echo as Christians is that not only at a truth level is a woman's body God's temple, but each person has value, as you said, and that I think frequently what's not communicated in exchanges between Christians who are trying to share their pro-life worldview with those who don't share that view, what happens is we not only don't successfully humanize the children in the womb, we almost end up dehumanizing the person we're in conversation with.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up.
Less valuable. So I think one of the real lessons here that we put people through is to, in the heat of a debate where you disagree, is A, of course, not become disagreeable, but B, to keep the attitude that I heard in Samantha's voice of saying, And you echoing, you're important, you matter, and you're created in the same image of God that I was created, or the child that you might be carrying, or the child that you might not value, but we all have that common denominator value called human existence.
And again, that's one of my pet peeves when it comes to this issue. So many people get so worked up about that unborn child and how important it is and how much that life matters. And in the midst of that, the person they're talking to is completely overlooked.
They're treated
like dirt.
Totally.
They're treated like they're less than human because they'd ever consider it. They're treated like they're a second-rate citizen. And to me, that is just as grievous as anyone thinking about going through with abortion. It is still devaluing human life. And the only difference is, I don't know, maybe we find babies cuter. I mean, I don't know what the difference is, but it's still a devaluing of human life when you treat someone like that just because they might be struggling with this issue.
And it is certainly passion misdirected.
Yes.
And one of the things that we probably the distinctive of our organization, there are other organizations out there that do a fine job of various components of pro-life work, but probably our strength that one could experience if they were to come to our program, which will be going to the University of Arizona and Arizona State in here in just a couple of weeks, is that we are able to help people understand how to direct their passion to those resources that we all have in Christ and that we all can gain through knowledge, but then we all need to have experiential practice in doing. And so we not only teach people to fish, so to speak, you know, Jesus said, follow me, I'll make you fishers of men. We not only teach those who attend our pre-exhibit seminars to fish, we're going to take them fishing, and we're going to learn how to engage people who really have a different worldview most of the time than we do, and in that, learn how to relate and love people regardless of where they are on the issue of abortion.
Well, and I think that the just looking at what Yo has said and what I have said and what you have said, David, is I think what it comes down to is the base of the topic of abortion or of anything else. When you're talking to people, when you're learning how to address this issue, the base of it is the gospel of Christ. It really is. Addressing it in a way that, like Yo said, we're not dehumanizing the person we're talking to. Like you said earlier, we're not being, we're not directing our passions on the issue in the wrong way. But we're being compassionate and at the same time remaining firm in what we're saying and what the gospel says. And you know what? Maybe somebody out there doesn't really agree with that. Maybe somebody thinks that you have to be passionate in a different kind of way. And so, you know, if you want to call in, 505-338-5790, and just let us know. And right now we actually have Zeb on the line. Zeb, how are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Zeb.
Yeah, so I went to a Bible camp a while back, and one of the main topics was abortion. And something I learned was, like, how to defend my faith against abortion. And one of the big things was, like, development and, like, what's the difference between killing a, like, a child who's 4 years old and then killing a child who's still in the womb. And, like, the difference is zero. I mean, it's just development, and that's different with adults. It's different with teenagers. And, I mean, like, some people say, well, a baby's in the womb, so they shouldn't have full rights yet. But that's, like, just pulling that stuff because the baby's in the womb because that's their home for 9 months while they can develop as, like, we go to preschool and learn how to develop our mental skills and just stuff like that. And people use all this crazy stuff about, like, how since we're in the mother's womb, we don't have that full option yet. But it's just a different location than if you're outside of the womb.
That's a good point, Zeb. And thanks so much for calling in and sharing
that. Hey, Zeb, don't let Zeb go yet.
Hey, Zeb, don't go.
What Bible camp?
Yeah, what Bible camp?
What Bible camp were you at?
Summit Ministries.
Hey, terrific. And who was the speaker?
Dr. David Noble.
Very good.
Awesome.
Very good.
All right, Zeb, thanks for calling in, man.
No problem.
All right. 505-338-5790 if you want to call in and share like Zeb did, or if you got, you know, a contention with this. I mean, I kind of feel bad. I build this as like, it's a very contentious emotional issue, and so far it's just been a very pleasant,
even-handed
discussion.
There are people out there who do not agree with us, and I know that for
I'm sure there are, but one of the nice things that about Raw Talk, that at least in my experience, that has always surprised me, but I've always been blessed by, is that when people call in and discuss whatever issue that is that we're discussing on Raw Talk, it's always well thought out and very even-handed. And so you guys are awesome. I love doing Raw Talk, especially when we get to talk with you guys, because all of you who call in just offer such great, well-thought-out input to the program. So thank you for always doing that. But again, you don't have to agree with us. 505-338-5790 if you want to call in. We have Lily on the line right now. Lily, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say?
Hello. I actually have a little bit of a different opinion.
Oh, good.
Awesome. I've never actually listened to your show before. I was just kind of scanning through, and I found this very interesting. And I do give you guys kudos for being kind of like not neutral, but very welcoming in your approach. And that's one of the things that I've disliked about a lot of individuals who are pro-life is that they're so negative, and I think it turns a lot of people off, especially younger people who may be, like, going to the decision on whether or not to have an abortion. I myself did when I was 17. I'm now 30, and I think that was the best decision for me at the time, and I don't regret it. I do not agree, though, with individuals having abortions that, you know, are, like, maybe 6 months along, 4 months along. I think that's a little bit different to me. Mm-hmm. You know, but I'm kind of like a little in between on this because I do support pro-life. I am pro-choice, which to me not make any sense, but I think as long as it's something that's done really early on, like I had my abortion at 4 weeks, that's the only reason why I was able to go through with it. If I were further along, I don't think I would have been able to do it.
Okay, now let me just ask a question, Lily, just out of curiosity, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What makes the difference between early and later to you? I mean, what makes the difference early to later to you?
Well, I think a lot of it is the stages. I mean, to me, I feel like at that point at 4 weeks, to me, it's not a baby yet. I mean, I understand that it's the process of a baby, you know, in its stage. But to me, that's an early enough stage. I'm not saying it's okay to have an abortion. I think it's like the, you know, I think it's something that's devastating, but I think that there are people that have horrible things happen to them, and I think that may be the best choice, such as rape, incest, you know, situations like that where, you know, for me, I think if I had the child, I would have felt reminded of what happened to me every time maybe I saw that child.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, also being young, I really felt like I had no choice. My parents were very hardcore Catholic. I think I would have been kicked out of the house. And so, you know, for me, that was the only option, like, that I felt that I had.
And
as far as the stages go, I mean, to me, I think that if you're a woman and you carry all the way to 6 months, why, to me, I think it's kind of irresponsible to choose at that point, well, oh, now I just decided I don't want to have the baby. I don't believe in partial birth abortions. I think that's taking it a little too far.
Okay, and again, just a question out of curiosity. I'm so glad that you called in, Lily, to offer this different perspective. I really am. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm asking these questions, because it gives me an opportunity to ask these questions because no one else. But my next question is, and this is just something I find kind of fascinating with what you're saying, you know, what I'm hearing is that up to a certain point, it's okay. And then after a certain point, it becomes not okay. And I'm just kind of curious, what is the basis for something transitioning from right to wrong? Do you hear what I'm saying? It's right for a time period, and then it becomes wrong. And again, my curiosity is, how do you make that transition? Just, again.
Well, I don't want to say that's something that each individual is going to have to decide on.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to stick sternly beside some moral code. I just feel that it just depends on your situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, well, why are you having the abortion?
Mm-hmm.
You know, first of all, I mean, is it because, you know, for a fact that your family's going to kick you out? Were you raped? Was it incest? You know, something like that. Or is it because, I mean, is this like your third or fourth abortion? Okay, that's really irresponsible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're just going out over and over and over again and, you know, being totally irresponsible and having to deal with this, well, yeah, I think that that's wrong too. But I think it's just really situational.
Mm-hmm.
Lily, could I jump in and ask you a question?
Yeah.
This is David.
It's kind of hard for me to hear you guys, so speak up a little.
Okay.
All right. Lily,
okay.
This is David. I just had a question. How would you answer someone who said this to you? It's not a baby until I say it's a baby.
Well, you know, that's just personal. It's very subjective. You know, that's a personal opinion. Now, it just depends on, you know, I mean, some people differ. You know, they feel as soon as, you know, biologically speaking, the sperm meets the egg and, you know, we get the embryo and all of the process starts and it's a baby. You know, I mean, is that true? I don't know.
How would you go about finding out whether that would be a member of the human community?
Well, I think it's the process of becoming a member of the human community. And I think your responsibility is to determine at what stage of the process, you know, you're willing to either keep or terminate. And I think that you need to really understand, like, okay, like I said, you know, are you 2 weeks? I don't think you can actually have an abortion until you're 4 weeks along. But are you 4 weeks or are you like 6 months? Okay, like I said, I think the 6 months is extremely irresponsible, and that is devastating. You know, that is cruel. But at the same time, you know, it's just my opinion. I don't really.
No, we're really glad that you called in.
Kind of. explain it more. It's just that's how I feel. I don't know.
So really, should...
Because I've been through it myself, and I've actually been through the process, and I think even if I did, like you guys were talking about earlier, see the pictures, I don't think it would change my mind. I don't think that I would feel bad. I don't think that, you know, I'm just so far beyond that, and I think that I made the right decision. Now, is that the right decision for everyone? No. No, I'm not saying if you're young, go out and have an abortion. That's not what I'm saying at all. I think that you need to look at your circumstances. Is your family going to be supportive? Do you have a good network? You know, all of these things that you really need to raise a child. You know, if you have that, then go for it.
You know what, Lily? I'm so glad that you called in. And the last thing I want you to do is to feel like you're being picked on here. So I'm
No, I'm not.
Well, and just to make sure that doesn't happen, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, man, thank you so much for calling
in and
sharing your opinion. I really do appreciate it. And I appreciate you tuning in and joining us. Yeah, I hope you stick around, listen to the rest of the conversation, and continue to think about this, because that's the number one thing for this show, is to get people to think about it and figure out why they believe what they believe in.
Yeah, and that's why I called, because I really wouldn't call into something like this just because I'm not Christian and I don't really, you know, probably follow the same moral code or guidelines or religious rules that you do. But I found that it's really interesting that you guys take such a different approach to this, and I think that's great.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Lily. I really do appreciate it, and I hope you have a great evening, all right?
You too.
All right, take care, Lily. And, you know, what else would you say in that type of situation, David? Because, you know, it really kind of brought up what I pointed out at the beginning of the program. It seems this issue really boils down to an issue of worldviews.
Well, and I think also Lily recognizes that what is it is answering the question, what is an important question to answer. And her view that we can't really know, unfortunately, is not shared by any biology book that you might pick up in the world. In fact, I make an offer to students on campuses who are, many of them, science majors, that if they can bring me a biology text in use on their campus that says that you can have human parents and at any point in your existence be something other than fully human, I'll eat the page. And I've never had to eat a biology textbook page yet, and I've been on more than some of them in the same campuses, but hundreds of campuses across the country. The reality is that scientifically there is really no debate about when we become human. It's the same concept of when a dog becomes a dog, a cat becomes a cat, a horse becomes a horse. When your parents get together is when you become a member of that particular genus. And so the need to, for most people, especially non-science majors, is to help educate them a little bit about just the science of human life and the science of reproductive biology. It really doesn't matter. You might want to be a duck, you might want to be a plane, you might want to fly, but if you've got human parents, you're walking.
I wanted to fly.
Oh, don't we all? Well, and David, I think actually, you know, I found this thing online on a website. And again, really quick, I just want to thank Lily for calling in.
If
anybody else who maybe shares her opinion or shares our opinion or has a completely different opinion, if you want to call in, we have some time left. So just 505-338-5790. And, you know, let us know. It's really interesting for us to hear and challenging for us to hear these different opinions on it, or maybe facts or statistics that you've found. But this thing that I found online, it's called the 10-Second Pro-Life Apologist. It's what it's called, and I think it touches on the topic that you were talking about, David. It says, has 3 points. It says, if the unborn is growing, it must be alive. Point number two, it says, if it has human parents, it must be human. And then the final point is, living humans like you and I are valuable, aren't they? And it's just a question to look at. And so you have those first 2 points, and then that last one that's just, you know...
Yeah, in fact, that comes from that 10-second apologist comes from our trainer, Stephen Wagner.
Well, there you go.
And Stephen has written a book called Common Ground Without Compromise.
That's right.
And I'd encourage Lily perhaps to pick that book up, because it's designed for people like Lily, who with whom we believe we have a lot in common. If we were able to sit down with Lily for say over a cup of coffee or a Coke and just have a conversation normal across the table, I bet we would find out we have a lot in common with Lily, and Lily has a lot in common with those who take a view that we're taking. And we are able then to come down to the points that we really don't seem to find common ground and discuss those with some rational and real compassion and yet rational and real effort to get to what are the facts of this. And so it's really a great book for your listeners. I would recommend it highly. It's called Common Ground Without Compromise. You can buy it off of Amazon. You can buy it from Stand to Reason, who Steve used to work for. Or you can just email us, or you can email us off of our website, which is jfaweb.org, and just request a copy, and we'll get that to you. I think it's about $10. But at any rate, it's a great resource for having conversations like we were just privileged to have with Lily.
And, you know, we got not a lot of time left, and there's a couple other things I want to mention real quick. So we're going to take one more caller, and then David and Mandy, I want to talk about some places people can go for resources to help them grapple with this issue, kind of like what you just mentioned, but be it pre- or post-abortion, places that people can go and get more good information to help them with this subject. And one thing that we didn't even get into, which we'll probably have to revisit again, is the whole stigma that came up. Why don't we talk about it more in the church?
Right.
Why don't we hear more stories? Why doesn't the church deal with this more directly? That's a whole nother show, which we will do because that part of it is near and dear to my heart.
And are we dealing with these issues in the right way?
Right. And we just didn't have time to get into it. So we're going to have to come back and do that because that's where I suddenly get really passionate. And you get, you know, we don't have time to do that.
Look forward
to
it.
So real quick, we have Levi on the line. Levi, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say, Levi?
I'm sorry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. I can hear you fine. Go ahead.
All right, great. Well, you know what? Listening to you guys have that compassionate approach to Lily just, you know, reminded me of how we have to approach this, as Christians anyway, how we have to approach the situation with love and mercy and stuff. And I, you know, my tendency, because I'm like a reformed smoker, I was passionately pro-choice just as recently as the early 90s. I'm in my 40s now, but I was passionately pro-choice. Couldn't understand why anybody would want to take that choice away from a woman. And now, after becoming born again, I just can't understand why everybody doesn't see that a life is being formed in the womb, and it's a life that God has given to the woman. And so, my tendency, and you kind of answer some of one of the questions you had real quick about why the church doesn't approach some of this stuff, is because, you know, my tendency, I gotta admit, is to really get, not angry, but, you know, super passionate about the idea that there's a life there and, you just can't deny that as human. And, you know, there's no one that has the right to eradicate a human life. An innocent human life anyway.
You know, and to address that, Levi, like, I hear what you're saying, but my response most often to that is, why are we surprised when the world acts like the world?
Exactly.
You know, and I hear you. Like, I feel the same way. It's like, I don't understand why you don't get this. But then again, they don't come at it from the same perspective I do as someone who has lived for the Lord all of my life, believes that the Bible is an absolute authority on all moral issues. I can't expect someone who doesn't have that same background to approach this the same way. And I think one of the biggest problems the church has when it comes to approaching this issue is we get upset when
the world expect the world
acts like the world.
Which, and Levi, that's, I think, one thing that you can look at with that. Like Yo was saying, before you were born again, you had a completely different view. I know that before I became a Christian, I wasn't all for it, but I kind of had Lily's stance on it, I think. My opinion was that it depended on the circumstance. It was, one by one. You kind of had to look at each case individually and just weigh the facts, I guess, is how I looked at it. So it is different.
And I hear what Levi's saying, but at the same time, it's like, you know, they don't know any better.
Yeah.
It's up to us to help them understand. Well, David, we got about 5 minutes left, so real quick, why don't you run down some resources that you guys offer as Justice for All to help people with this, or how they can get involved, you know, with your ministry training like you were mentioning.
Thank you. You know, let me just, if I could, bridge a bit from where we've been with Levi and from your own particular interests, perhaps on another time we can talk about. One of the reasons it's my conviction that the church is not clued in to what the opportunities are here is, again, that they're coming from a different worldview, if you can believe that. Church leaders are coming from a different experience. We now have churches predominantly filled with leadership who are teaching people how to fish. That is, reach out and fish for people. They're teaching people how to fish every weekend, but they themselves have never gone fishing, not really. And so the problem here really is a point of how do we get a church that is in leader is being led by people who have no experience in teaching people other than their flock how to fish. How do we get them to teach people how to fish? We've got to get them involved in fishing first for them to really communicate that successfully to their people in the pew. And so our whole orientation is to teach the next generation of Christian leaders how to fish so that they will be a different kind of leadership. We're reaching down actually into the middle school arena. We'll be, in fact, we just trained one school there in Tucson last week. We'll be training another school in 2 weeks where we'll reach down into the sixth grade and start, and we're starting to teach children as young as sixth graders on the value of human life. We actually don't even talk about abortion with them. But the seventh graders we frequently will, and for sure we will by the eighth grade. And so we're teaching these kids, and then not only the information about abortion they need to know to successfully negotiate the very real risks that are presented in their lives as they mature into young adults, but teaching them how to reach their peers, and then actually taking them into the field and then having them under our tutelage practice that and then come back to us and say, I just had this conversation with that guy over there, and it didn't go so well. Or just come back and say, bring the person to us and say, this person had a question, and I didn't know how to answer it. Could you help me with that? And so all of a sudden, the classroom becomes the field trip, and that's really our program. We'll, if you want to go to our website and email us, you'll be able to get a schedule of where our exhibits and where our training seminars will be. But suffice to say, we'll be, I think, at 12 universities here in the next 4 or 5 months, and opportunities going to Arizona, Texas, Georgia, Alabama, California, Colorado. And so really what we do is on-site training, and so you'd have to be in the region to be able to take advantage of those. But the way to find out where those are is to go ahead and email us off of our website, which is jfaweb.org.
And, Mandy, I know you had some resources that you wanted to share with people to help them with this issue and get a, you know, a handle on it.
Right, definitely. A couple of the websites that I found just in researching and getting links from Focus on the Family, the main one that I was going to is just www.heartlink.org. And that had resources for maybe women who are expecting and are considering abortion, fathers even of these children, or even women who have had an abortion. One thing I would like to encourage you, I actually want to read a verse real quick. It's out of Psalm 130, verses 3 to 5. It says, if you, Lord, should mark our iniquities, O Lord, who could stand? But there's forgiveness with you, that you may be feared. I wait for the Lord, my soul waits, and in his word I do hope. And I really just, because I know, and I've known women who have had abortions that are hurting, because there's a whole list of consequences for it, whether it's emotional or physical. And I really just encourage these women who are hurting to visit this website. It had a lot of really good resources and articles that can be read and stories from other women who have been through the same thing. Another one that I found, it's just, and this one's a little bit more well-known, it's www.care-net.org. It's care with a hyphen, net.org. And that just had, again, resources for these women. Resource, maybe a mother who is joyfully expecting a child, they have resources there for those women as well. They're just great websites, and they share a lot from personal experience to scientific facts and places that you can go. It just lists it all.
Well, we're just about out of time, and before we wrap things up, one final thought I wanted to offer that, again, I get passionate about when it comes to this issue. If you are truly pro-life, I would have to say then you must be pro-evangelistic. If you are truly for life, then you must be concerned about all the souls who are lost and are going to hell. That is just as important, if not more so, than the unborn children that we get all worked up about.
Amen.
If you are pro-life, then be pro-life by all means. It is a good thing to be pro-life, but you got to show the same amount of concern, devotion, passion, and even fierceness when it comes to rescuing people from the pit of hell. And if you can't muster up that same passion for a person as you can for an unborn child, again, I'd go back and ask yourself the question, why do I feel like I'm pro-life? What does that really mean? What do I believe about this? Because if you aren't sure what your foundation is for this, you are on shaky ground, my friend, and that is not a place any of us want to be. And with that passionate plea, I'm going to have to wrap things up because we're all out of time. David Lee from Justice for All, thank you so much for joining us tonight, David. And hold on, we'll say goodbye to you here in just a moment.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right.
Thanks.
And thanks, everyone who called in. Thank you, Lily, for calling in and sharing your different opinion. And for everyone else who called in with great thoughts, we really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And next Sunday on Raw Talk, there's going to be no football going on, but we're going to talk about TV anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk a little bit about Lost, what can be found in Lost, and expand that into just how much should we use pop culture to share the gospel? Can we get carried away with doing that? And that should be a fun show.
So you can take a break from TV to listen to radio about TV.
That's right.
You
can do that. And just in case you're curious, the Steelers are up 23-14 and 3.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Not looking so good for the Ravens, just in case anyone was curious. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Thank you, everyone, for calling in, and have a shway week in the Lord.